Digital health sounds so 2020 or 2021 when the pandemic sent adoption skyrocketing and deal-making into a tizzy. But despite the more recent market troubles, digital management for chronic conditions remains a fundamentally sound concept. Technology, workflows, and business models continue to be refined, and sustainable winners are emerging. Among the success stories is Dario Health, which has had a steady drumbeat of deals with customers who see the value of an integrated approach across multiple chronic conditions and technology platforms. Hi, everyone. I'm David Williams, president of strategy consulting firm Health Business Group and host of the Health Biz Podcast, a weekly show where I interview top healthcare leaders about their lives and careers. My guest today is Rick Anderson, president at Dario Health. If you enjoy this episode, please press that like button and subscribe. Rick, welcome to the Health Biz Podcast.
Thanks for having me, David.
Let's start off talking about you, and in particular, I'm interested in your background, your upbringing. You know, what was your childhood like? Any influences that have stuck with you throughout your career?
So I grew up in Southern California, in a beach town here. I think the couple of things that probably influenced me quite a bit was that I lived in other parts of the country and other parts of the world because where my father was doing for a living. So I think that that at a very early age brought a lot of different views and was able to see different cultures and different kinds of things around the world, which, you know, sort of rounded up into an adventurous sense. So I took many pathways, whether it was in school or otherwise, or you know, when all my classmates were taking Spanish because that would make sense in Southern California. In high school, I took German. So, you know, usually chose the path less traveled, I think. And part of that was a sense of adventure that was bred in that.
Sounds good. Well, what was your dad doing, if you're allowed to say?
He worked for a defense contractor. Most of what he did was top secret.
Okay.
So I don't really know.
Yeah, sounds good. It makes it for an easier story, right? Sometimes people have these relationships with their dad, but you can't talk about it. It's classified. Yeah. So, and then what did you do for school after high school?
So I went to UC Santa Barbara, and what I was interested in when I went there was robotics. They had just had a new program that they'd launched with IBM around robotics, and I spent about 3 years going down an engineering pathway and then decided that that pathway was not going to work for me. So I switched majors in my fourth year in college and went into business economics and accounting. And so left UC Santa Barbara and went to work for Price Waterhouse, actually focused in the entertainment industry.
Nice. And how was that?
It was interesting. I mean, it was so I spent about 4 or 5 years on the audit side. And then back in those days, Pricewaterhouse actually had an investment bank. Primarily what they did was M&A transactions. So I moved over into the M&A side, and I was one of two people in the US that had entertainment experience. So I ended up doing a whole series of different kinds of industries. So the very first time I saw a healthcare medical device company, but also did healthcare deals all over the world, Europe, South America, Central America, and then obviously all over the US. So, you know, got exposure to shoes, food, you know, different kinds of investors, et cetera. So that, you know, from that perspective, it was a very good experience. And I think one of the things that comes out of being a consultant is you get to see lots of different business models, lots of different companies, how they tackle different kinds of challenges and work those things through with them. But you never get to see the results of your own work. And so I actually left PW during the dot-com craze and worked for a number of different small internet companies, internet telephony, you know, really more on the high tech side, on the finance side, just, you know, learning more about those kinds of things, which was an interesting progression. And then moved into what I would like to call a quasi incubator, where we were, you know, in some cases funding companies, in other cases we were building those companies from scratch around a technology. And that was my second introduction, I guess, to healthcare in terms of biotech tech company, which I ended up then ultimately becoming the CFO of one of those companies, and then moved back into the healthcare side in direct-to-consumer in mental health And then ultimately through a pivot in that company in 2008, when the market went to hell in a handbasket again, which we probably all remember, really pursued a business model more on the health plan side. So I spent, more than 10 years growing a company from mostly an idea or a pivot out of that company into a little bit more than, a $500 million market cap company, really focused on chronic conditions through the behavioral health lens, which is then ultimately what led me into Dario, as I got introduced to the CEO of Dario through a mutual acquaintance. And, we started talking about the way that they were looking at the world and what I'd been doing. And, we had, some synergies around approaching it. I thought that Dario was well set. The company, and I'm sure we'll talk about this a little bit, but it started in the direct-to-consumer side of the world and was now looking to move into the health plan and employer, what we tend to refer to as B2B business. And it was an opportunity to take what I'd done for the last decade and retranslate it in a different business with, really focused on chronic conditions and digital versus what I was doing at the old company. But it was, really reusing a lot of those skills. And so I joined Dario in January of 2020, which was,
Yeah, it sounds like, you had a good experience and preparation, both the sort of adventurous childhood and then being around for the dot-com boom and crash, and then the 2008 one, which I almost forgot about. And then, 2020, you're all set for it. So they say good things come, I think, sometimes in threes. So maybe that's the end of it. So makes sense how, you kind of come into Dario and when you were, say more about the origin of the company. As you said, it come from more of a consumer side to begin with, which is not where it is now.
Yeah. So originally the company started, it started with a focus on a medical device, a blood glucose monitor, and was developing a really novel device from that perspective. And then the current Dario CEO joined the company. He's got a background in software engineering, was very interested in diabetes and really how behavior change would impact that. So took it more in terms of what we would now call digital health, but back then we wouldn't have called digital health direction, really having the software focused on, helping people manage their chronic conditions in between doctor's visits. And, I think made some very smart decisions around going direct to consumer first, because that was the easiest way to get data. And then once you had data, you could utilize that from a machine learning model and other areas to really understand what it was that would give value to people and keep them engaged on the platform, and, enabled them to be able to develop the software application using the consumer as the product manager. So the result of that was, a solution that was highly engaging. They were retaining 80% of the people on the platform in a year, had 4.9 out of 5 stars on the Apple App Store. I don't remember the number of reviews when I got here, but it was in the tens of thousands. Now it's, 20,000-ish in terms of that. So, really people liked what was being done. And then as part of that process, then added hypertension and prediabetes weight management to that same platform. So covered the cardiometabolic spectrum of conditions around that. And then, really looked beginning 2018, late 2018, 2019, decided that, really wanted to move into the B2B side of the business for a few different reasons, one of which was acquisition cost of customers was high. I often say, the fastest way to $1 million in revenue is direct to consumer. But it does have a lot of other benefits, like you can get data, you can use that, you can build your product, you can get product market fit. But then the fastest way to $100 million is really more on the B2B side than the B2C side. So, it was the right transition for the company, in my opinion, at that time. It was ready for it.
How does the fact that they started off on the direct consumer side inform the approach on the B2B side in terms of employers, plans, and providers? Is there some, I don't know if there's any negative part of it, but is there anything positive about having come really from that D2C starting point?
I think there's a couple of positive things. One is the product itself and how engaging it is with consumers. One of the things, and we're seeing healthcare move more and more towards consumerism. But, you know, if you think about the whole rest of your life, you know, Apple, Android, you know, pick your poison as it relates to, you know, which brand you like. You know, almost everything that you do in every sector now, banking, you can do on your phone. It's been digitized. It's more efficient. You know, all, you know, if you fly much, obviously, you know, all of the applications associated with flying and checking in and, you know, how you go through customs even is largely done digitally now. And healthcare was sort of the one exception to that. And in terms of that digital experience, other consumer companies have really learned how to engage people and taught them what to expect. And I think consumers get to healthcare and they look at it and say, okay, this is not at all what I was looking for. It's provider centric. It's not consumer centric. And I think Dario brings, you know, a unique perspective to that, having, you know, built the product in a consumer environment, continues to have that DNA. You know, and I like to think about it as being, you know, the only consumer grade solution and platform that's in the digital health space. Most everybody else built their platforms to change buyer behavior. And then the consumer was a secondary, or the member is a secondary element to what they built. So, you know, I think there's an advantage there. And I also think there's an advantage because you have to be able, on the B2B side, you have to be able to outreach to people, bring them onto the platform, get them running up and running and engage them and, you know, provide that consumer experience from that point of view. And the company has that experience from being on the direct consumer side for several years.
So if we, that's a very helpful, you know, understanding of the, you know, background of the company, how you got to where you are now. Let's talk about where the company is now. And I'm interested in what's going on in the market. I alluded to it in my introduction that, you know, there's this kind of long time, 20 plus years talking about digital health, that we called it different things along the way. And then all of a sudden, you know, in 2 weeks in March and April of 2020, there was more, you know, increase of utilization than had been experienced in the previous three decades, plus, you know, sort of got to where people thought it would be 20 years later. And then that sort of sprung back a little bit. But how, with all that in mind, how are employers and payers evaluating digital health benefits right now in 2023? How do they think about that?
Yeah, so I think that, you know, yes, there was a big push in 2020, you know, benefited the industry greatly because, you know, most things when people are concerned about what the transitions look like and how does it impact things, right, that slows things down. But we had no choice in this case. So, you know, we learned that things that were concerns weren't really concerns. We learned that other things were issues that nobody anticipated, right? But then had to work through those, you know, it maintained long enough. I think as we came out of the pandemic, or still coming out of the pandemic, depending on who you're talking to, you know, really people started looking at what is a hybrid model look like. You know, will everybody go back to, you know, brick and mortar? And I don't believe there's actually consensus around exactly how that will play out. But I think the business models are changing in ways that have said, look, digital is here to stay. Telehealth is here to stay. And I would distinguish between those two, by the way. And brick and mortar is here to stay, right? So what's the right mix of those? What's the right pathway? What's the right navigation to utilize those most effectively, especially in an environment where, you know, for the first time in 25 years of being in healthcare, I'm hearing people talk about, we're never going to have enough providers. For most of that 25 years, people talked about, hey, you know, we got to find ways to get more providers. We've got to use, you know, care extenders. We've got to, you know, use different kinds of, you know, top, people should be at the top of their license. And how do we do that for nurses and nurse practitioners and all those things, which were all about how do we get more providers? And all of those are appropriate and useful in expanding capacity. But I think that we've recognized we're just never going to have enough. You know, that's especially true on the behavioral health side, but it's true on the medical side as well. So how do we utilize these technologies to provide care to different people at different levels, and really screen into our most valuable and rarest resources? I only mean most valuable because they're the rarest, you know, that are there so that we can get access to care, you know, at a reasonable cost to as many people as possible. I think, you know, employers now have several years of working with digital health companies, you know, not decades, but several years. And I think that's starting to evolve in a couple of different ways. One is people are really looking for more evidence. They're trying to understand what the engagement levels are. I think that's where direct consumer really, you know, helps, because if you have a consumer background or DNA, you really understand how to engage people. I think that's differential. I think we're seeing that, three, 4 years into some of the other, programs have been done that maybe they're not meeting their promise from that perspective. I think on the health plan side, because they've been willing to sell solutions through to their employer customers, but they haven't really used them in their own at-risk business, that the other side of their business. I think they're starting to really evaluate that. I think they're starting to be more structure around how they're looking at that. But health plans demand a lot more data. So I think that there is a bigger and bigger emphasis across both sides in terms of what kinds of data do you have, what kinds of clinical data do you have, what kinds of economic data do you have around the impact of these solutions. And I think we're going to be continuing to work through that process for the next many years.
So you alluded to before the success with the consumers and the high ratings in the App Store, and talking about data that's required, especially by payers and to some extent by employers as well. How has that translated into what you have done at Dario in terms of studies that you've done, what you published, and how credible are these sort of results seen?
I mean, I think that's an excellent question. We have about 40 studies that we've done internally on the data that we have, having the number of members on the platform, 250,000 people, roughly using the platform, has a big impact in terms of the amount of data that you can create. So some of our studies are, 2-3 years in length. One of them has almost 40,000 people in it. So these are large longitudinal studies that, have a high level of credibility. But one of the things I'm really excited about, we announced a few weeks ago, Sanofi is a partner of Dario's. And one of the things that they did was take our data and then in an independent way, using a third party, evaluate that. They matched it to lab data. They matched it to claims data. They've looked at it from a clinical perspective. They looked at it from a cost perspective. And a few weeks ago, the top line was released on the one that's looking at it on a cost basis, or really on a utilization of healthcare basis. And we saw almost a 25% reduction in hospitalization in a difference-in-difference model. So it's one of the most rigorous studies that's out there from a digital health perspective. I think it's closer to the standard that everybody else is going to get pushed to. And it's showing really good results around that. So I think we have a large amount of studies. We have longer studies, longitudinal studies, and very large studies. And I think all of those things are the building blocks of the data that's required for folks like health plans, which are, highly skeptical and very analytical, are looking for.
So you mentioned the Sanofi relationship. So congratulations on that. How does that tie in with the kind of employer and health plan side of things there? Sometimes an adversarial relationship where the plans are concerned about and the employers about the costs, increasing when the pharma company is involved. What's Sanofi's interest and how does it work in the overall ecosystem and business model that you have for the company?
So I think that the Sanofi relationship with Dario is unique in the marketplace from what I've seen. Most of the time that you're seeing pharma and digital health collaboration or deals is they're really trying to partner a digital solution with one of their medications. Yeah. And that's not the way that Sanofi approached it. They approached it from the perspective of, we think digital health is a, multi-billion dollar opportunity in the future. And we want to participate, experiment, and grow with somebody within, within the industry. And, they looked at, pretty much every player in the industry before they partnered with Dario ultimately. The deal has, basically three elements to it. One is that they are co-promoting our solution to their health plan partners. So they're using their market access team to talk to health plans about the Dario solution, the complete Dario solution. So not tied to, any, Sanofi products around it from that perspective, but it's just access, into another side of the health plans. The second part is they had a bunch of ideas that they were interested in exploring and needed a platform that had users on it, had high levels of engagement. And so we have some development where they're paying us to do development on top of our platform. We launched the first year's pieces of that we developed into the direct-to-consumer side of our business, which we continue to maintain, although it's smaller than it was. And, you know, we've tested those through and we're going to push that into the B2B side, you know, sometime this year in terms of those features. You know, that's one of the advantage, the other advantage to having direct to consumer side of the business is it gives you, you know, essentially a little bit of a laboratory where we can go back to those same people, use them again as product managers and say, hey, is this the kind of thing that people will use? And you don't have to ask them, you just give it to them and see if they'll use it. Right. So it's the best kind of feedback that you can get. And then the last part of the relationship with Sanofi, of course, is the data pieces that I was just referring to. So, you know, how do you up the data around that? They brought their real world evidence team to the table, which is, you know, they have substantial capabilities in that area because that's what they do is do studies. Yeah. You know, so that's a great boon to us as well.
One of the things that you mentioned with the company is a more integrated approach across multiple chronic conditions as opposed to just one. And, you know, what would you say are the pluses and minuses of that? I mean, obviously you think that the integrated approach is better, but, you know, why is that better? And let's say if I just have one condition, you know, why wouldn't I want something that's just focused on that as opposed to more across the board?
So I think that one of the things, and when we looked at the conditions we brought on and, you know, we didn't really talk about this, but, you know, post when I came to Dario, at that point, we had the you know, diabetes, prediabetes, and hypertension. We bought three companies and added musculoskeletal, so think kind of digital physical therapy and posture, and then behavioral health to that. So we've taken those pieces, integrated them into one platform. Many of the people that utilize our platform have multiple conditions, so there is a significant amount of overlap between those conditions. I think it's a much better consumer experience to be able to say, look, I'm going to manage everything together rather than I'm going to use a different app for this and a different app for that and a different app for that. But we did take the approach of that I refer to as sort of the department store model, or, you know, maybe it's the Uber Eats model, which is, you know, let people enter where they want to enter. So to your point, if I have one condition or I just want to focus on one condition, which often happens, we allow them to enter, you know, into the platform and just go directly to diabetes or MSK or behavioral health. But the flip side to that is that they can then move between those two. So, you know, if I have, for example, hypertension and diabetes, which, you know, have very high levels of comorbidity, it's easy to manage all that in one place. I have one user journey. It's informed by the data. In the other places, I have one coach, right? So that feels like a consumer experience. It feels like an experience that's wrapped around me rather than using the other pieces. I don't think there are a lot of downsides to doing that. You know, the one argument would be, look, if you just do one condition, you're like a super expert in that condition. But I think that ignores the consumer. As part of that, I think it ignores the member because, you know, members want high level, you know, high value solutions, but they don't necessarily want to have 15 of them or four of them or five of them. And as a matter of fact, some of the data that we look at would suggest that if you give people, you know, three different really good solutions to manage their chronic conditions rather than an integrated one, they won't pick one, they'll pick none.
Got it. Well, that's a good argument right there. So it sounds like you've been buying some companies. One way to get into it, I can see things like, as you mentioned, hypertension and diabetes going together. You know, behavioral health, I suppose, crosses everything. MSK is something employers care about because it has a big impact on their workforce. But would you say you've got like a cohesive and comprehensive set now, or do you need to go down the path of, you know, having more things that are going to be common that are, you know, that you don't currently cover?
From an employer perspective, you know, we believe we cover most of the top conditions that they are concerned about. If you look at the work that the benefit consultants have done in terms of, you know, what are the strategies that their customers and clients are looking at, you know, we cover essentially six of the top seven. The seventh is wealth management. So, you know, we're probably never going to be in that business. You know, we have a formula for the way that we look at conditions. We look for things that, you know, are heavily comorbid, that are pain points for our customers, and that are behaviorally driven. So, you know, we really consider ourselves a software and behavior change company. And so we look for things where you could impact the outcomes by changing the behavior. And that's really what the platform is helping people do, is manage their disease between doctor's visits. Because if you think about it, you know, if you have a chronic disease, you probably see your doctor maybe once a month, more likely once a quarter for, you know, 10 minutes, right? So how do you optimize? What are the things you can do that, you know, can help you manage that disease as it waxes and wanes, you know, in your real life over a period of time? And that's really what we're looking for the software to do, is support people in that, give them recommendations and information that's useful to them, that's individualized to them, so that they can use that, so that they'll use it and stay engaged, you know, with that platform.
Let's switch topics a little bit and talk about coaching. Now, coaching is one of those things that digital health companies had, you know, brought along as an innovation over the past few years. The idea is you're not just going to use a tool, you need a human to help you out. And then I think in terms of their approach to scaling, companies that have done that have said, well, they can use more technology, and I think now particularly more AI, in order to have a large number of patients per coach. You seem to have a little bit of a different view on coaching. What's the Dario perspective on coaching?
I think it's just, you know, maybe it's a couple of degrees off of what you're saying, but I think we really look at it through the lens of what works for the person. So, you know, some people want to talk to a coach, some people will run from a coach, right? They only want to do it digitally. You know, just like, you know, you'll see people engage with telehealth differently, you know, audio only is actually the default setting for telehealth, which most people don't talk about. You know, very few people will actually do full video, but those that like it, you know, will absolutely do it. So, you know, what really matters is what matters to that, you know, that inpatient and what they're looking for as part of that. So yes, our solution is probably, you know, 85, 90% digital versus human, but we do have coaches. We have two layers of coaches, you know, within the program, one that we would characterize, or at least I would characterize, is more of a, you know, an informed health friend. So really the ability to support somebody as they go through the process, but is knowledgeable at the same time around the conditions that they're doing. And then we have what we call expert coaches, which are things like diabetes educators, therapists, physical therapists, you know, so folks that are, you know, operating at a different level, have a different level of knowledge, and we use those selectively. And that's where we're using things like, you know, I'll call it AI, but, you know, it really machine learning to understand where are the right points to use those humans. And I think it gives you a few benefits. One is it allows you to tailor your solution more to the audience. Again, like going back to the consumer, how do I want to interact? Me personally, like, for example, I want to talk to a coach. I'd much rather get everything digitally. I get tired of talking, you know, so, but, you know, there's others that all they want to deal with is a coach, and you see that full spectrum on our platform. But it really breaks down to be like 90% digital, and, you know, sort of 10% humans, but then using the machine learning, using the data that we have to understand where to use a coach, you know, who wants to use a coach? Do they respond to it? Do they not respond to it? You know, who's seeking out a coach? How does that work? What is the information that would be good for a coach to deliver versus where is it better to deliver that digitally? And I think that, I mean, to me as an industry as a whole, there's a whole lot of promise, you know, going back to the idea, you know, we want to have, you know, lower cost care. Well, that means using targeted high dollar resources in the right places and not squandering that.
There's a lot of digital health companies that have struggled over the past, you know, couple of years. And we've been talking about, you've, you know, got a lot of successes to announce in terms of new deals with customers, with partners like Sanofi. And at the same time, it's not clear that the stock market has rewarded you for doing that. What's the state of, you know, the company relative to the industry, and sort of how do you explain the, you know, the Wall Street perspective?
Yeah, so I think that, you know, as we came out of the, right, when we went into the pandemic, maybe that's the better place to start, right? You had you know, anything that was digital, there was a huge amount of interest behind. All of the volume got pushed under the digital side of it. Obviously, the Teladoc Livongo merger drove a lot of interest, you know, very high valuations that merger was done at, lots of promises associated with that. And then as we came out of the pandemic, and maybe the Teladoc Livongo merger didn't work out the way people were hoping. So you had both of those forces, and that's the largest public company that's in the digital health space. Yeah. And you saw the entire sector essentially get punished for slowing growth, which, you know, given the rates of growth that they had, I often laugh about the fact if, you know, you just can't assume that's going to continue forever, but you know, that's a natural effect when Wall Street looks at these kinds of things. So, you know, they punished the industry. We've seen the industry, and Dario has pretty much been consistent with the industry. You know, we've seen the industry recover a little bit more. The macroeconomic environment, though, is still very unfriendly to companies that are not yet profitable, which would encompass most of the digital health companies.
Yeah.
You know, so I think, you know, clear pathway, we focus on things like clear pathway to profitability. You know, we've reduced our burn and our operating expenses and increased our revenue every year. We've adjusted direct to consumer versus B2B. So, you know, as we've moved more to B2B, obviously our margins improve as well. So if you look at the financial profile of the company, it's improved. But, you know, we're not yet getting rewarded the same way we were during the pandemic, you know, in terms of the growth. But I think that, you know, in the longer run, the growth that we're seeing and the financial profile in terms of profitability and movement towards break even will benefit us, especially as the, you know, market continues to evolve, which, you know, like I mentioned earlier, I've seen lots of these situations before. There's actually some really interesting graphs out there that show the digital health valuation and how that looks against the dot-com bust and how that worked out. And the real benefit, I think, of the culling that you saw in the dot-com world is somewhat similar to what we may well be seeing based on the data in the digital health world. And I think we're going to see a lot of consolidation in digital health. I think, you know, we're going to see stronger companies that are going to, you know, exit this period of time, let's call it, this market.
Great. Well, I'm going to shift focus once again and ask your last question, which is, with all your time that you're busy with the company, have you had a chance to read any books and anything good that you might recommend?
I actually do not get a chance to read many books, but I do read a lot of things, including studies around, you know, behavioral economics and, you know, the impact of some of these different kinds of consumer models, like Hooked, for example, is a book that, which actually is a book that I have read, that's really interesting around it. I think that, you know, the types of things, if we look going forward and you look at consumerism, I think, you know, the kinds of things that at least I like to focus on and that I think are going to be important going forward are, you know, what's the consumerism? What do people respond to? How do you do that, both from a product perspective, like a traditional product perspective, as well as from a choice architecture perspective, whether that be behavioral economics or some other element. And I think the thing that interests me about behavioral economics is it applies not only to the members on the platform and how they make choices and how you influence those choices, but also to customers. So, you know, I pretty much will read anything I can get my hands on that's new in those kinds of areas.
Sounds great. Well, Rick Anderson, president of Dario Health, I want to say thank you very much for joining me today on the Health Biz Podcast.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
You've been listening to the Health Biz Podcast with me, David Williams, president of Health Business Group. I conduct in-depth interviews with leaders in healthcare, business, and policy. If you like what you hear, go ahead and subscribe on your favorite service. While you're at it, go ahead and subscribe on your second and third favorite services as well. There's more good stuff to come, and you won't want to miss an episode. If your organization is seeking strategy consulting services in healthcare, check out our website, healthbusinessgroup.com.